Humanity is growing and connecting. Tomorrow's world needs more energy from more places.
But to find our net zero future, we must overcome the natural constraints of many new energy sources.
This is the Energy Transition Solutions Podcast, where we look at the energy challenges of modern life and the innovators finding solutions. Join us for a low-carbon, high-energy conversation with your host, Joe Battier.
This views of the host are his own and should not be viewed as those of any business, corporation, or government entity.
Hello and welcome to the Energy Transition Solutions Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Battier. This is the show where we bring you low-carbon, high-energy stories from the people solving the energy challenges of modern life. I am here today with John Higgins, CEO of RS Technologies. RS Technologies, from my understanding, essentially develops composite poles. Now, I know there's going to be so much more to that, but as I was talking and learning about them, I knew that I had to have them on. And so this being the last recording I'm doing at CERAWeek by S&P Global, I just want to thank both of you and Edelman and everybody who is still here at CERAWeek. Thank you so much for making it all the way to Friday. And I've been starting to ramble. So, John, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. If you would please share with me and the audience your background and a quick introduction to RS Technologies.
Thanks, Joe. Good morning, and thanks for having us on the podcast. Super excited to be here. I'm CEO of RS Technologies. We're the leading composite pole manufacturer, utility pole manufacturer in North America. And I've been CEO now for 8 weeks, but previously was a director on the board of directors for about 5 years, overseeing the, you know, as a director, the growth of the company. But I think also important as background is I've been in and around this T&D business now for over 20 years. Most recently led the distribution business for MasTec for about a decade. So feel real comfortable in and around the transmission distribution space that where we operate.
That's great. And so for just to make sure, T&D stands for transmission and distribution.
Correct. Transmission and distribution.
Okay. And so let's hear a little bit about RS Technologies.
Sure. So RS Technologies manufactures composite, high-performance composite utility poles. Our customers tend to be, you know, the household name utilities in North America, both Canada and the U.S. And I mean, the great thing about our pole and the, you know, sort of the most, the fundamental value proposition relates to its ability, you know, to its durability. And it is ultimately a pole that, you know, doesn't the wind doesn't blow it over. It won't catch fire and burn up. You know, woodpeckers can't, you know, tear it up. Ice storms are really not an issue with it. And it's just, it's a pole that lasts. And that inherent value in its durability means that you don't have to keep coming back and touching it. And working on it, and utilities value that.
Yeah, that seems to make sense. So let's cover a few very high level things. First, we're talking about composite poles. So are these, I guess, what size? And I'm assuming for everybody, just to make sure we're on the same page, these are the poles that are holding electric lines.
Absolutely.
And so, are we talking about the ones that are kind of in neighborhoods, or are we talking about those big, massive things that need huge right-of-ways?
So the answer is both. What you're describing are the transmission, electric transmission lines on the bigger end, right, and electric distribution on the smaller size. And so, you know, as you step back and look at an electrical system for any utility, right, transmission is what fundamentally moves the electrons from the generation source, the power plant, the, you know, the solar farm, the wind farm, ultimately into substations. And then the voltage is stepped down to distribution voltage, which is then how it is carried into neighborhoods and, you know, ultimately into sort of the load's use, right, by end users. And so our poles are useful in both, for both of those types of electric structures. So on the distribution side, we, let me back up. Our poles are modular. Okay, so what that means is that our poles are built in sections, you know, and think, you know, 15, 20 foot long section of pole that's tapered. And so just like a fishing rod, you can put a fishing rod together where you've got a base section and a tip section. You sort of put them together in the middle. Our poles are similarly constructed, those modules. So you can slide different modules together to configure varying sizes of pole, right? So on the small end, we have distribution poles, which might be, you know, three sections that you put together to build a 45-foot distribution pole. You know, on the other end of the spectrum, you might put more bigger sections together to build a transmission pole. And again, it's all highly engineered to the specific application of the utility we're servicing.
Wow. So that is, it's unique to think about comparing it to the, I guess, distribution poles in my neighborhood at home. You just have one big wooden pole. Whereas here, if you want to go a little bit higher or a little bit lower, and really whatever the utility and city says is this is the spec, you can kind of build for that.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's it is it sounds simple, but so important and so ingenious to implement and have for implementation.
And there are other benefits of that modular structure that may not be obvious. Things like you know, the poles nest inside one another. And so when we ship them from our manufacturing facilities to the end user, to the utility, or the utility transports them, you know, they can be put together in a compact form. And so it's easier to move them around. Similarly, when those small sections, you know, if I'm doing a distribution line in what's called rear easement, so it would be in your backyard. You know, many neighborhoods in Texas have power lines running in their backyards, and actually all over North America. It doesn't require special, you know, equipment to get that pole into the backyard. That can be done by hand, which means that, you know, the homeowner's a lot happier because you're not tearing up the yard and letting the dog out and, you know, doing all kinds of things you'd need to do conventionally with a wood pole.
Yeah. Wow. So I want to take one step back. So we've been composite poles. What can you share with us on what actually this is? Because I tried to explain it to somebody without having the understanding. And I was like, you know, like composite, like something like carbon fiber, something that, you know, just really super, super strong and not wood. And they're like, oh, well, a carbon fiber pole would be crazy expensive.
Yeah.
So what is it actually?
So our poles are fundamentally made from fiberglass, which brings, you know, that it just think fiberglass as you'd use in, you know, any sort of conventional fiberglass and resin application. Okay, so there are threads of fiberglass that are soaked in a proprietary resin. And that's really ultimately our secret sauce, is that proprietary resin. But you have fiberglass in this resin that is then wound onto a mandrel. And a mandrel is just a form, okay? Think of it like it is the shape that you're ultimately trying to manufacture, and you wind the fiberglass onto the form, onto the mandrel, soaked in resin. And you wind it around the form, and you also wind it back and forth on the form to give the module the elements of strength that are going to be needed in the particular application. And all of that is super highly engineered so that, you know, it addresses the needs of our customers.
Yeah, very cool. And fiberglass has been around for a while, and it does seem like that is the real opportunities of technology and new engineering is what you're explaining there, bringing that in. So let's answer another question here that you alluded to, but let's add some larger numbers around it. Why do we need composite poles? I guess when we're talking about poles for transmission and distribution, what is the problem that you are ultimately trying to solve?
Well, there are a couple of them. a couple problems that exist out there. It's, you know, utilities are in a tough spot these days, right? Where, you know, it starts with the fact that wood is a natural, wood is the de facto standard for most poles, right, in North America. And there are about 170 million poles right now deployed in North America, okay? And wood degrades over time. And as it degrades, it's more susceptible to, you know, to wind, to weather events, which I think it's fair to say are increasing in severity and frequency. And so the sum total of that is that, you know, the fragility, the reliability and resiliency of our nation's electric infrastructure, right, is in, you know, it's got its challenges now, given that, you know, the fact that we have this incumbent base of mostly wood poles. Then you layer on top of that the fact that there actually aren't enough trees out there to support the needs that utilities have to augment and grow the grid in the face of the need for, you know, things like electrification and hardening and, you know, all of the different ongoing repair that needs to occur to these 170 million poles that are out there and have been there for a while. Wow. Okay. And so you have sort of, it's a confluence of different needs. You know, on the one hand, you have the impact of weather and the durability of the pole itself. The other, you have just a shortage that's increasing in severity for the bigger, stronger wood poles, which are what the utilities need. Enter composites, and we bring a solution that is durable, all right, that's not susceptible over its 80 plus year life to, you know, the weather events that I've just described. We have never had a pole failure in a hurricane, ever. Wow. And we have tens of thousands of poles installed around the world, over 450 different utility customers, or customers, I should say, around the world. And so that sort of strength and that sort of history gives our customers confidence that the utility poles are, you know, part of their solution at scale to addressing reliability and resiliency needs.
Wow. So that in itself, I think, is something that people probably recognize, that danger of, or maybe the risk with wooden poles. And I think any of us walking around our neighborhoods have noticed the, you know, after a long weekend or something, all of a sudden there's a pole that's broken. And it's like, wait, now this whole road has to be closed until we get a new pole in. And sometimes that could take a while. So it's an amazing fact to think about, that your poles have never come down in a hurricane. So one thing that just had me thinking about was, with natural poles, you have that, I guess they're usually tarred for longevity. Is there anything like that associated with these composite poles, that you're going to notice on like hot days that they're, for lack of a better term, a little bit smelly or a little bit extra sticky?
No, absolutely not. I mean, and you're correct. There are different preservatives, you know, some of which are, you know, a little nastier than others, that have historically been used to preserve wood poles, to try to add, you know, to add to the life of the wood pole. Ours are environmentally neutral. There's no leaching, nothing like that in any form at all. In fact, our poles are what are called hydrophobic. And what that means is that water beads on them, you know, just like a waxed car, right, where the water kind of beads on it and runs off. That's what happens with our poles, all right? And so there's really just no, that's one of the selling points of our poles, is the fact that they are absolutely environmentally neutral.
Wow.
And stable.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting to hear. So generally speaking, with the composite poles, are there any any challenges to implementation and to, I guess, installation, or any of just like a common challenge in this, in using the poles in this traditional setting?
Not really. I mean, I spent 20 years in the transmission and distribution services area building poles and for our customers. And so it's not unlike any new product. And there's some differences in technique, ultimately, in how you install the pole, like where you can drill and how you attach things to it. But it's nothing that any customer has ever had an issue with. You know, and linemen like them. They're easy to work with. They're a lot lighter than wood. You know, the fact that it doesn't take, you know, as much heavy equipment necessarily to install them. And the fact that you don't have to keep, you know, you don't have to go back and keep working on them and maintaining them over time is all a plus for, you know, for the folks that have to install them.
Yeah. From RS Technologies specific now, what kind of challenges do you see in getting into the market and getting more of these poles deployed?
So that's a great question. I mean, utilities are, I think they're in a tough spot, and just given all of the different demands that are on our utility customers, in terms of, you know, load growth, in terms of capital that needs to be deployed for electrification and hardening and just keeping their systems up. And so, and they're also utilities, I would say in general, our customers want to make sure that, you know, be absolutely certain about that solution. So change is something that just takes time within utility customers. And so, you know, from our perspective, you know, we just think it's a great solution and are eager to have all of the utilities adopt it right away. And they absolutely are. I mean, we have household name utilities, many household name utilities across North America who are all in on composite poles. You know, but for the others, they're just earlier on in the curve, in the adoption curve, and it takes time as we, you know, prove our performance, as we get on standards with the utility, which means that we're, you know, accepted as a viable wood pole alternative on the system. And that just takes time for us. And but what's changed now is with the, you know, decreasing wood supply and with the increasing severity and frequency of, you know, the weather events, fires, storms, all of that, I think the urgency, the sense of urgency compounded by the ratepayers saying, hey, it's not okay if my power goes out, right? All of that is coming together in a sort of a perfect storm to help accelerate our growth going forward.
Yeah. Very interesting. And I think that, so thinking about ratepayers and thinking about building out the transmission and distribution, one thing that I guess I noticed after Winter Storm Uri here in Texas, this was 2022, I think, there was a significant hike up in transmission cost on my electricity bills. And everybody, anybody I talked to was very upset about that, because all of a sudden transmission was even more expensive than the electricity that we were buying. And so this is a story that maybe tangentially relates to the question I'm asking, that being, how does this impact that ability to build out transmission in a cost-effective way? Transmission and distribution.
Well, I don't want to get out of my wheelhouse here. I mean, there's a whole framework there about how, you know, how the utilities and the, you know, and the transmission providers all, you know, sort of how that all works, how that whole soup works. At the end of the day, you know, we're agnostic to how all that works. What we're focused on is building the highest and best value utility structure, right, to be able to drive the total cost of ownership on that transmission line or that distribution line down, right? And we do that by our poles being more durable, being more reliable, being more resilient. And, you know, when there is an event, right, that causes, that would have otherwise caused that particular line to fail, when you're using our poles, the chances of that failure are dramatically lower. Hmm. And that ultimately, you know, keeps the ratepayers happy and keeps the cost down.
Yeah. Okay. I understand that. And I think that helps hopefully frame that question for anybody who is hearing this and wondering, how do I incorporate these poles into my transmission system? So one more question, forward looking here. So feel free to punt if you want to, but where do you see this technology and these poles going? And specifically, this whole time we've been talking, for some reason, windmills have just been flying in my head. And I'm really curious, is that an area that you've thought about at all?
Well, we are a beneficiary, you know, of the renewable build out, in that ultimately, you know, that means that you need more transmission line, more distribution, right, to get to the load. But in terms of, so we're focused on the utility structure market, just laser focused on that market. Now, going forward, I think, you know, as has been our history, we're fundamentally a technology business. We're about creating the world's best, highest performance utility structures that just blow our customers away, and are, you know, the market leader. And so as I think forward for our business, I think about, okay, you know, what are the other, how do we perhaps introduce other utility structure products within that family, so we can leverage that technology we have into other, other utility structures. And what I mean specifically is, for example, you know, the world will never 100% replace all wood with composite. That's not what we believe. No. That's not realistic. It's not credible. Okay, but in the market there are poles that are probably lower value, okay, or maybe in a position where they don't need all the bells and whistles that we have on our premier product. And so perhaps we introduce products that go and try to address that market specifically. And that's where the utilities don't think of their grids sort of as a single monolith, right? With a one size fits all. And what we want to do is align our different is as we move forward, I would envision us aligning our product portfolio, right, with those different needs that the utilities have.
Yep, that makes sense. And that's a good way to look at it. And the idea of laser focusing here is, as you point out, 170 million poles in the U.S. alone. That's
a North America number. So
North America, yeah. Okay, North America. But that's still, there's so many more. And we just heard earlier today talking about the whole multidimensional energy transition and thinking about areas that don't have grids at all right now, where there's going to need to be poles put in those places, presumably. So a lot of opportunity, and it makes sense to make sure that opportunity is met, as opposed to trying to spread too far out and trying to develop too many products that maybe are not the best that you can do. So I think that's a good spot to kind of wrap up that part of the conversation. I've got final questions that I ask all my guests. So now let's jump into those. That first question being, what is a favorite book of yours that you would recommend?
Oh, golly. Undaunted Courage. I'm a big fan of nonfiction, and I just think it's a great story of Lewis and Clark and, you know, taking that journey cross country back, you know, before they had any of the, you know, the kind of support or benefits of modern society is just amazing to me.
All right. That's a good one. I will add it to the list. Next question being, how do we get to net zero and beyond?
That's a great question. I mean, and I think I believe in the markets and the power of the markets, and that ultimately means, you know, the power of the consumer and the user driving that. And so I think there you know, a lot of different ways that ultimately we navigate that, but it starts with, you know, the folks who are ultimately paying the bills, driving that, you know, driving it commercially, driving it politically, with what they do every day. And I think that's key to getting to net zero.
All right. I like that. And I always, it's always interesting to hear, and it's almost always a conversation of, is it going to be consumer driven? Is it going to be regulatory driven? Is there a mix, or is it just something that is either not going to happen at all or just somehow naturally happen because of, you know, something that is more passive? And so I like that idea there, because really that's what I agree with, that there's going to be this consumer input that drives everything. So now the last question, you get to ask me a question.
Oh, okay. CERAWeek, what was your big takeaway from this great week and interacting with all of your different guests?
Yeah. My big takeaway, I don't know if I have one specific takeaway, but I'm always inspired by CERAWeek, because there are new technologies that you get to learn about. There are innovations and conversations or rhetoric that you hear from larger companies that are pushing towards something in the decarbonization or energy transition space. And even as we look at the total energy basket and total energy makeup and the challenges that we have to reaching net zero or to building out a reliable and resilient grid from the energy generation, transmission, and distribution standpoints, ultimately there, if you caught every single talk there was, you would then be able to put this into a big mind map and say, we've got this, we can solve this, and here it is, and I can see the path to net zero and beyond. So it's always more of a almost like a good kickoff to the year of like, okay, let's go get this done. I think that would be my biggest takeaway, is that it's always inspiring. So many people are doing so many cool things, and I appreciate the ability to keep sharing those stories and to keep learning from those people.
That's good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, John, thank you so much for joining me on the show today and for making it through all of CERAWeek by S&P Global. Before we sign off, is there anything else you'd like to say?
Oh, just thanks for your time. Much appreciated.
All right. You're welcome, John. And thank you again, everyone, for joining us on this episode of the Energy Transition Solutions Podcast. If you're enjoying the show, share it with a friend and leave a review telling me what you're enjoying most or what you'd like to hear more of. If you want more news and energy-related stories, we have all sorts of energy-related podcasts on OGGN. You can find them by connecting with us on LinkedIn or visiting the website. Finally, if you have any questions, comments, corrections, or have a story that you would like to share, send me an email. That email address is joe.battier@oggn.com. If you don't use email, find me on LinkedIn. And until next time, remember to keep it low carbon and high energy.
Join us again next week for another low carbon, high energy story on the Energy Transition Solutions Podcast, a production of the Oil and Gas Global Network. Learn more at oggn.com.